And the last picture, it is a good transition with the topic of the woman. Astrid, you come now. We have, so Astrid Hiller, you are curator at the Wilhelm Haack Museum in Ludwigshafen, also near Mannheim. And you have so an activity of a curator and an interest for photography, contemporary art. And you wrote your PhD at the Courtauld Institute in London about photography and about women in photography, with the women under socialism and both sides of the camera.
Yes.
That's something we will also discuss. Women who create image and women in images. And thank you. I let you the floor.
Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for the invitation to Jérôme and Johanna, which gave me the opportunity to actually go back to that research I did actually some time ago and in a way review it through the lens of your conference title. So, in the late 1950s, Leipzig-based photographer Evelyn Richter, then in her late 20s, embarked upon a documentary project focusing on the lives and working conditions of women under socialism, with a particular focus on the female industrial worker. It was an independent project which the photographer initiated herself, motivated by personal interests and concerns. In the following, I wish to analyze Richter's work within the social, cultural, and political framework of socialist reconstruction in the GDR. On the one hand, her photographs will be examined in terms of the shifting conditions of photographic practice within East German visual culture, as articulated by the normative discourse of socialist realism. And on the other, Richter's work will be set in relation to the state's renegotiation of socialist womanhood and its accompanying images in the press and mass media of the time. As we will see at first view, Richter's photographs of female industrial workers would seem to adhere to the imagery that was officially encouraged and rewarded. So by sketching out its original framework of production, I wish to reveal the slippages and deviations that made her project different, challenging, possibly subversive of official discourses. In keeping with the conference's title, I also want to pose the question, what did it mean for Richter, a young woman photographer, to develop and articulate an independent photographic voice in the face of socialist realism? Evelyn Richter's photographic beginnings fall into the highly dichotomized climate of the 1950s, which saw the extensive streamlining and repoliticizing of culture in the GDR under the doctrine of Soviet-style socialist realism. In 1951, a declaration by the Central Committee of the SED, the Socialist Unity Party of Germany, entitled "The Fight Against Formalism in Art and Literature for a Progressive German Culture," denounced all pre-war modernist tendencies as formalist, indeed as acts of American cultural barbarism. Instead, socialist realism was proclaimed as the only legitimate art form, and its ideological and aesthetic principles, as laid down by Zhdanov at the Soviet Writers' Congress in 1934, were uniformly applied to all areas of cultural production, including the mass media and photography. In his programmatic article, Realism and Formalism in Photography, published in 1953, the photo theorist Ernst Nitsche attested photography an inherent realism, which made it seem predestined to give visual expression to what was postulated as new and typical in the forming socialist society of the GDR, including in Nietzsche's words, and I quote, "the laughing happy life, our proud youth, our workers, and our beautiful German homeland." The photographer's task was quite simply to make a critical and creative selection of reality, nonetheless based on firm Marxist-Leninist principles. The so-called formalism debate had important consequences for the medium's application, function, and status within GDR visual culture. On the one hand, it subsisted in the form of an artistically second-rank yet very popular amateur pastime. On the other, its ostensible immediacy and persuasiveness, what Roland Barthes has called its seemingly evidential force, was put in the service of state propaganda. Thus, GDR photojournalism was expected to produce positive, forward-looking images to help promote the blueprint of a new society. This was mostly achieved by staged and retouched images designed to act as a didactic tool to further class consciousness and party loyalty. And in keeping with Marxist-Leninist discourse, the worker, the builder of socialism, was to be the privileged subject of photographic representation, either in the form of individual portraits of so-called typical role models, or as an agent of collective labor, as exemplified by the socialist work brigades. So, and I'm showing you on the left Herbert Hensky's 1948 photograph of the miner Adolf Hennecke, who initiated the activist movement in the GDR based on the model of Stakhanov, in an orchestrated campaign which saw him surpassing his daily work quota by over 300%. And strictly speaking, the photograph, of course, predates the installment of socialist realism in the GDR, but it became a prototype for the socialist realist iconography of the potent worker, and also, very important, his harmonious relationship with the machine. And on the right, you can see a construction brigade. The photo was taken in 1952 within the context of the reconstruction of Berlin's Stalinallee. And even though the workers are not working, their fierce determination is demonstrated on the banner that says something like, "Whoever wants to destroy our buildings of peace, we will wrap their knuckles." In such images, photography's evidential force was fully exploited to serve explicitly defined political ends. However, the medium's potential not only to create, but also disrupt the monosemic consensus that constituted official discourse, made the realist documentary mode also seem a precarious form which had to be closely watched. After a private training at the studio of traditional portrait photographer Pan Walter in Dresden, Evelyn Richter enrolled in 1953 at the Art Academy in Leipzig, the Hochschule für Grafik und Buchkunst, called HGB. But the Academy's programmatic emphasis on socialist realism constituted a source of conflict and also frustration for Richter, who kind of refused to accept that realism in photography did not mean to search what was new in society through a close observation of everyday life, but instead to illustrate party slogans by means of staged and manipulated images. And another example, for instance, there are many of these propaganda brochures that again were published by the so-called National Reconstruction Program within the context of the construction of Berlin's Stalinallee. Yeah, and you have different iconographies, the family, and also, again, the radiant workers, their eyes lifted towards that future we've heard of a lot today. And in a self-portrait of 1952, entitled Selbstinszenierung, which could be translated as Staging the Self, and in which Richter, this is herself, yeah, obviously it's a self-portrait, is dressed in the most extravagant Dada-esque attire, kind of reminiscent of Hugo Ball, brandishing absurd makeshift props. She self-consciously poked fun at the socialist realist practice of staging the new human being. In the end, formalist experimentations and her pronounced interest in developments in the western part of Germany, notably Otto Steinert's subjective photography, prompted her premature dismissal from the Academy in 1956. In the following, Richter earned a living as a commercial photographer for many years until actually the 1980s. All the while, in her personal work, she continued to develop a conceptually minded realist style influenced by international developments such as Magnum's human interest photography, which were filtered through to her through catalogs and exhibitions. And interestingly enough, The Family of Man, which toured West Berlin in 1955 in particular, is said to have left a strong impression on her. So I guess Western propaganda was quite effective. Working as a commercial photographer, Richter was sent to factories on routine assignments, affording her a glimpse into the industrial sector to which she wouldn't normally have had access. The situations she encountered there often stood in sharp contrast to the celebratory images of its products, which she was commissioned to produce. In particular, the overworked women toiling at sometimes dangerously outdated machines caught her attention. And before long, she started taking photographs of them, photographs that revealed the discrepancies she witnessed between official rhetoric and, as we will see, on women's emancipation, and individually experienced reality. Her project involved spending additional time in the factories, getting to know the workers, and familiarizing herself with their work. However, without a legitimizing framework, Richter's activities were viewed with suspicion by the authorities, and official permissions to take photographs were only reluctantly granted. Moreover, by choosing to focus on the female industrial worker, Richter effectively appropriated an icon whose signification went well beyond its immediate didactic function to imply a whole set of notions, representations, and structures through which state socialism defined itself. Yeah, stylized as an activist heroine by official discourse, the female industrial worker of the new state-owned industry came to epitomize during the course of the 1950s the successful realization of the proletarian revolution, not only in terms of the redistribution of the means of production, but also with regard to women's emancipation. In fact, in the GDR, female emancipation was largely premised on women's massive entry into the industrial workforce. By 1957, already around 65% of women of working age were engaged in paid employment or undergoing vocational training. However, the bulk of female employment remained concentrated in the lower wage segments, and the ideological emphasis on labor force participation as an important precondition for female emancipation ultimately prevented a more differentiated discussion of gender equity, which would re-examine, for instance, the nature of gendered role divisions, such as, for instance, the gender-specific allocations of domestic chores. Meanwhile, photography played a crucial role in popularizing new models of female identification that accompanied and helped legitimize this process of social transformation. Through its production and consistent reiteration of certain stereotypes across many different sites of signification, photography seemingly naturalized the ideological workings behind those images and helped perpetuate a limited and limiting range of female role models, personified in representations of activist heroines or subsumed into the iconography of a uniform collective body dedicated to the enterprise of socialist reconstruction, the female worker was textually encoded into socialist realist discourse and practice. And I'm showing you, unfortunately, no activist heroine, but on the left, two young apprentice seamstresses in a clothing factory in Erfurt in a photograph taken in 1954. And on the right, it's the cover of the magazine Die Arbeiterin, The Woman Worker, which was a magazine for the interests of the working woman, with a portrait here of a young mechanical engineer. And here a photograph of a sewing brigade from a factory producing fine stockings in Oberlangwitz near Karl Marx Stadt, also a photograph taken in 1954. And I don't have the name of the photographers, those were press photographs. The didactic function of these images, or I have to formulate it differently, in that case there was no photographer indicated. Of course, there are also famous press photographers. The didactic function of these images as they appeared in women's magazines, such as Für Dich, For You, or the above-mentioned short-lived The Woman Worker, Die Arbeiterin, was to persuade, and I quote, reluctant husbands, unquote, and women themselves that women should join the socialist workforce. Articles such as The Machine, The Friend of the Woman Worker, were meant to break down inhibitions and slowly introduce women to her new role in socialist society, where, and I quote from the article, the new machine, the mechanized and automated apparatus, is the woman's true friend. The qualified woman worker controls the new machine. She masters the new technology. While in early photographs, women workers can still be seen to betray a sense of awkwardness when handling heavy machinery, these representations soon gave way to pictures which came to determine the official image of socialist women by making, as the historian Irene Dörling has pointed out, and I quote, the unquestioned nature of female employment graphically vivid through completely unspectacular depictions of competent, productive women routinely and skillfully working while radiating a self-evident confidence in their abilities. This renegotiation of typical female role models was accompanied by important changes in the conception of photojournalism. At the SED's third conference on press issues in 1959, the rigid and staged images of earlier years were now condemned as damaging. Instead, a socialist humanism true to life was advocated, and photojournalists were encouraged to capture the vitality of life in all its diversity. And this is just an example, another cover of Die Arbeiterin, which, although it's from 59, and it kind of gives an idea of the new, more matter-of-fact style that was from now on encouraged. So, at first view, Evelyn Richter's photographs of female industrial workers would seem to squarely fit into this new photographic conception, in that they too present a direct, rather unspectacular view of women's daily work in the industrial sector. The photograph at the linotype, taken in 1959 at the printing office of the SED's newspaper Neues Deutschland, shows a young woman of whom it can certainly be said that she is routinely and skillfully working while radiating a self-evident confidence in her abilities. In fact, she is operating the heavy printing press with such self-effacing naturalness that she almost seems to have become one with the machine, an integral part of the apparatus. Yet, upon closer inspection, Richter's photograph thwarts the socialist consensus by a subtle disruption of accepted codes and conventions. While the picture's formal composition, with the woman's position echoing the different components of the machinery, actually seems to underline the Marxist-Leninist idea of an organic fusion of worker and machine. What is more, it seems graphically to reiterate the socialist belief that woman's emancipation cannot be divorced from her participation in production. The focus, however, on the massive printing press with its complex technical apparatus, which could be seen maybe to bespeak a rationalist masculine logic, prompts a shift of meaning. Dwarfed by the enormous bulk of the machinery, the woman appears no longer in control, but rather stuck in her position, encased in the cogs and wheels, like in a harness of torture, to quote Carl Gernot Kühn, from which only her head, hands, and, interestingly enough, unprotected feet protrude. Through its reversal of standard iconographic codes, Richter's photograph thus poses the question as to female autonomy within such a reductionist, paternalistic paradigm. And in terms of rhetorical conventions and codes of portraiture too, Richter's photographs of women in the workplace have little in common with the smiling prototypes that we have seen before of socialist realist iconography. And I'm here showing two photographs taken in a weaving mill in Ringenheim an der Lausitz, also in 1959. And here two more photographs from the printing office of the Neues Deutschland in Berlin, also from 1959. The woman at the linotype and her colleagues lack the enthusiastic zeal that lends meaning to similar portraits in the press and mass media of that time. In fact, their seemingly concentrated gazes could also be seen to betray a sense of fatigue or even absent-mindedness. And here we are reminded of their notorious double or even sometimes triple burden of socialist women. The women also significantly do not answer to the viewer's gaze, which renders identification difficult, but instead grants them a certain independence and possibly resistance to political instrumentalization. Also, the image's internal signifiers, such as their black and whiteness, the graininess of print, also the weakening of certain stereotypes of femininity, they all reiterate tropes more commonly associated with the depiction of anonymous collective labor rather than individual portraiture. In many of these photographs, the industrial environment dominates the composition, creating a sometimes gloomy or labyrinthine setting of endless, I don't know, not here, but intertwined wires, tubes. They are often very overwhelming engine parts. And the women, by comparison, appear small and lost. Clearly, the viewer is not presented with female role models for emulation, but with anonymous working women who, despite or precisely because they cannot be readily identified, come across as threateningly real. Coming back to the woman at the linotype, the ostensible lack of any concrete textual signifiers, and let alone captions, for instance, which would allow the viewer to extract the right meaning from a photograph such as at the linotype, introduces a textual ambiguity into Richter's work, which in the end represented the real challenge to socialist realist discourse based at it was on a monosemic conception of and construction of reality. For although the parameters of photographic signification had been expanded to include diversity, even conflict, the photographer's work continued to be mediated through a rigidly defined framework of Marxist-Leninist reference, which clearly prescribed what was acceptable and what was not. So to conclude, as we have seen, Richter's self-commissioned documentary project was motivated by the wish critically to evaluate socialist imperatives against individually experienced reality, originating at the intersection between official discourses and private interests and concerns. It was the result of an involved and trusting working relationship with the women she portrayed, which clearly distinguishes her project from more impersonal journalistic work bound by tight deadlines. Bearing all this in mind, it is interesting to note that in the late 50s, by 1959, Richter was asked by a GDR publishing house to submit her photographs for publication in a state commissioned book, which would be dedicated to, I quote, women under socialism and geared to an international audience. However, on the condition that she would from now on only take photographs at officially designated places. The publishing deal provided Richter with the much needed official framework to pursue her work. Still, one cannot wonder what would have been the outcome of such a collaboration had it actually taken place, when in fact in 1961, with the building of the wall, the book project was dropped, dismissed as no longer a priority by the cultural authorities. As a consequence, Richter's photographs of women in the new state-owned industry were never published in that form. It was not before the 1970s, actually The Woman at the Linotype was first published in 1973, that some of these photographs were rediscovered and made available to a wider public, albeit in a very different form and context, as single unrelated photographs serving revisionist agendas, either on museum walls or in surveys of the history of GDR photography, a history which was which now appropriated and legitimized a certain strand of humanist documentary work, which Richter's photographs of the 1950s had helped forge in the first place. Thank you.
For this presentation by Richter.